This is Alina Rocha Menocal from the Overseas Development Institute, where I am a research fellow in the Politics and Governance Program, and I am leading on a work stream on democracies in transition. I am here today with Sarah Jenkins to discuss the forthcoming elections in Kenya. And Sarah has recently completed a PhD at the University of Aberystwyth, where she examined ethnic and electoral-related violence in Kenya. Now, most countries in sub-Saharan Africa are now considered electoral democracies. However, their ability to manage multi-party competition and peaceful exchange of power has varied quite substantively across the region. In some places, elections have actually sparked conflict and undermined the very essence of democracy. In recent years, we have witnessed episodes of election-related violence across sub-Saharan Africa in places like the Côte d'Ivoire, Ethiopia, Guinea, Nigeria, Zimbabwe, and obviously Kenya. These incidents have highlighted the need for more effective mechanisms and institutions that can channel conflict without resorting to violence. And in less than a week, Kenya will hold what many analysts are calling as perhaps the most significant electoral contest in the region in 2013. It will be the country's first general elections since the widespread post-election violence of 2007 and 2008. And this coming Monday, the effectiveness of measures that have been instituted since then, including a new constitution and transitional justice reforms, will be put to the test. So now, Sarah, let's place the 2007 election and contemporary situation in Kenya in historical perspective. And can you discuss with us why it is that elections in Kenya have historically been accompanied by violence?
I think there are really three sort of complex but interrelated factors that are going on. Now, the first two I'm not really going to discuss at great length. It's more sort of there's a diffusion and normalization of violence in politics in Kenya, which means that the state has actually lost control over its monopoly of the use of force. And the second is a culture of impunity, which really means that there's little disincentive for politicians to orchestrate violence around campaigns in order to hold and maintain power. But the one I really want to talk about is the zero-sum nature of Kenyan politics, because it's this that's really the overarching factor in most Kenyan elections since the reintroduction of multi-party politics. And there's actually a popular phrase that you hear spoken a lot in the lead-up to elections in Kenya, and that phrase is, it's our turn to eat. And this really has a dual meaning. So for political elites, holding public office presents considerable opportunities for personal enrichment, the accumulation of personal wealth. So political power is an opportunity for politicians themselves to eat from the national cake. But at the same time, the phrase points to the expectation that this political power will translate into benefits and goods for the politicians, mostly ethnic supporters. So historically in Kenya, there's actually been an uneven distribution of goods and resources, which are really the result of discriminatory policies in the post-colonial era. So since independence, resources, services, opportunities, the benefits of state power ultimately have been distributed along ethno-regional lines. So during Kenyatta's presidency, the Kikuyu benefited disproportionately in the allocation of land, for example. Top-level government positions were monopolized by members of this community. There was greater investment in infrastructure, more development projects, a greater provision of services in the Kikuyu homeland. And this pattern has continued under subsequent regimes. So both President Moi and President Kibaki were perceived to be favouring their own ethnic groups at the expense of others. So this has fostered a pervasive understanding that to hold power means to enjoy the spoils of the state, to have greater life chances. So it's really raised the stakes of elections. So on the flip side of all this, then, those communities who are not in power feel marginalised and excluded, and they have fewer opportunities, their homes are less developed, and they don't have the same access to resources. And this our turn to eat mentality has really fueled violence in the country by, you know, elites are dying to win. So they are prepared and able to use any means necessary to do so, whether that be violent intimidation of supporters and things. And secondly, for people on the ground, these high hopes for future benefits under friendly rule, so to speak, and deep fears of exclusion under the rule of another community, not only provides a fertile ground for elite mobilisation, but it also encourages mass-led violence, which can operate independently of elite manipulation.
Thank you, Sarah. Those are very insightful comments. It seems to me that one of the critical challenges then that the democratization process in Kenya faces is how to transcend this ethnic regional divide in ways that can actually unite rather than divide. Do you think that the new constitution and the constitutional process that was undertaken in Kenya can help in this respect? And what are some of the challenges that this new constitution poses?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in some ways the constitutional reforms have a great potential to stabilize Kenyan democracy. But at the same time, there are some significant problems with some of the reforms that are being implemented. So some of the reforms, such as judicial reform, supposedly will encourage politicians to pursue electoral disputes through the courts, being more secure in the knowledge that their appeals will be dealt with fairly and in a timely manner. But perhaps the most significant and large-scale reform has been that of devolution and decentralisation of power. So this massive change has seen the creation of 47 counties and the incorporation of gubernatorial elections, Senate seats and other county representatives as key public office positions. And these changes are an attempt to reduce the powers of the presidency, so to counter this zero-sum nature of Kenyan politics and to address these grievances over previous unequal distribution. So given the fact that we've already highlighted how important that is in sort of facilitating election violence in the past, it could well have a very significant impact. But you're absolutely right to kind of point to this ethnic factor as a problem, because while devolving power certainly addresses one key driver of the conflict, it actually exacerbates another. So there's a strong understanding in Kenya that groups that reside in a particular territory own that territory, and they have a greater political say in that territory. So this devolution of power to regional level might actually just shift violence from the sort of presidential elections to the lower level elections.
Thank you again, Sarah. Again, those are very insightful comments and about the potential opportunities that the Constitution presents, but also the challenges, including this just shifting the arena of struggle from the national to the decentralized level. One of the things that we are exploring through the Democracies in Transition work is precisely the fact that these countries that are trying to democratize face multiple challenges of transformation at the same time, and these may be processes that do not necessarily reinforce one another. One of the things that strikes me about Kenya is in this election, you have obviously the possibility for different candidates to run for office, but there's this real tension with the justice component because some of the candidates have been implicated in crimes against humanity. Could you comment on that?
Absolutely. I think the Kenyan case really does draw attention to the difficulties of sequencing in state building processes. And yeah, two of the presidential candidates, well, Uhuru Kenyatta, who's the presidential candidate, and his running mate, William Ruto, have both facing trials with the International Criminal Court. And obviously the aim of these trials is really to address this culture of impunity that's persisted and has fed into violence. But while a lack of accountability, you know, is a key factor, the ICC trials at the moment are actually potentially having an inflammatory effect on the elections at the moment. So the issue has been politicised by the candidates themselves. Ruto and Kenyatta have publicly accused their opponent, Raila Odinga, of spearheading their prosecution and of conspiring with the international community against them. Conflicts between political elites like these frequently translate into inter-ethnic tensions on the ground. So the fierce hostilities between these frontrunners has actually deepened ethnic polarisation in the country. And some scholars have actually suggested that there's been a deliberate construction of an us against them or an us against the world mentality, which has prompted more passionate and fervent support of these leaders. So obviously the ICC trials are having the effect of heightening emotions in an already emotionally charged setting, really.
Well, that's actually quite sobering. What are your prospects for the upcoming election, especially against the backdrop of the violence of 2007-2008 that I do believe gripped Kenyans themselves quite strikingly and led to a process of self-learning? What lessons do you think have been learned, and what do you think is going to happen?
Obviously, there's a great deal of sort of anxiety around this election, and it's very difficult to kind of predict exactly what's going to happen. There are some worrying indicators. The IEBC, which is the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, has lost some credibility already due to sort of a bungling of voter registrations. So this means that anything short of a relatively smooth and unproblematic election could kind of trigger some sort of response. Kenyan newspapers have reported recently an increase in hate speech in the country, which is exactly what we saw in the lead up to 2007. Police reforms haven't yet been implemented. There's been little attempt to disarm militias and gangs, and there have already been incidents of violence around the party nominations. Having said that, though, it's not all sort of doom and gloom, and I think it is important to note that some significant lessons have been learned and some significant progress has been made. And I think one of the key aspects that will cool this election is the fact that there will be a presidential runoff if neither candidate gets an outright majority to start with. So that, I think that certainly will cool tensions. Security has definitely been heightened in these potential hotspots, and we saw that they did cool the situation during the party nominations relatively quickly. And ultimately, I think it's important to say that the majority of Kenyans are keen to avoid violence. You know, they don't want to see a repeat of what happened. So there is a great deal of optimism in the country. But I think, just to kind of really point out, we do need to be careful not to expect a complete transformation of Kenyan politics in such a short space of time. And yes, these elections are momentous. They're very important. Other African countries that have similar problems will certainly be watching with great interest to see how they go. But social transformation and democratic consolidation isn't instantaneous. And these elections are just the first step along what is likely to be a very bumpy road.
Thank you, Sarah, very much for very insightful comments. And I especially appreciate what you have said at the end about how complex the processes of democratization and democratic transition are, elections being a core component, but only one piece in a much more complex puzzle. And these are very much the issues at the core of our Democracies in Transition work stream. All eyes will be watching Kenya on the 4th of March, and we hope everything goes well. We are very excited to announce that we have an event on the 19th of March, which will be comparing the electoral trajectories of Kenya and Ghana. And everybody is very welcome to register for the event online and to come to ODI to attend the event in person. You can find the details on the ODI website, and please register online.